Clancy has discouraged him adequately, I believe. And if the need arises, I will take care of Picard. I want you to stay on mission. You made a shambles of the operation here. Your team destroyed the thing before it could be interrogated and nearly blew our cover. We have one more opportunity. Do not squander it.
Transfer complete.
And welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the Borg Bridge,
this is Tyler Orton saying, "Hell yeah!"
And that's the most mellow profanity you can say on this episode, huh?
No kidding. But if I go back to last episode, I'm going to call you a codger.
And we're here this time to talk about the latest Picard episode, episode 2 of season 1, Maps and Legends.
Yeah, well, what kind of legends are you most curious about, Cam, when it comes to Star Trek lore? Tal Shiar legends?
Or maybe beyond that,
okay.
Tyler.
What were the maps involved with this? I was a little bit lost on that front.
There was a lot of computer screens in this episode. Maybe there were some maps mixed in there.
Okay. My cartography skills did not lend itself well to this particular episode title.
You were like Buster Bluth?
Well, obviously, the blue part is the land. That's a great line from series premiere. Yeah. So, yeah, this one. Okay, so episode one, we get into kind of more of that hangout factor with Picard.
Yeah.
Where we're being absorbed in his life. And
very much a mood setter, I felt, too.
Yeah, this one, however, we're getting into the plot.
Oh, yeah, this was, holy smokes, this was like a tight 42 minutes of exposition.
Yeah, and I feel much less confident about the series based on this than I did on, say, episode one.
But sure.
Look, all is not lost.
All is never lost,
yeah,
Tyler.
This is just episode two, and I think what they're doing is a lot of place setting here. They want to make sure that we understand what the stakes are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it, actually, there are some interesting ways in which they are going about doing that. One way to establish that is Picard's health. His parietal lobe is not doing so well, so here's minimal sorts of treatments that he can get. So there is kind of that ticking timer, so to speak, but we also know that the show's coming back for season two, so...
I know, I was going to say, well, that sure doesn't bode well for the ongoing adventures of Picard, ..
Yeah. So, there's other stuff, like trying to... They don't want to spell everything out for us.
Right.
But I'll say this, Cam. When Picard and the Scottish Romulan beamed into the Boston apartment...
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, that's when I got worried. Where like she was just doing technobabble.
Right.
About a whole lot of stuff that just confused me. And I just had to go with it. And I hoped like they didn't expect me to follow along.
Well, that was where it became like CSI Picard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so
I just, but whenever they're going through sequences like that, I'm just like, okay, get to the results because everything you're telling me is irrelevant. Like,
I know,
how
exactly.
You found this information in the computer is not important to me as a viewer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't need a minute of explaining how, you know, I don't, whatever, shadow programs and files. It doesn't matter. You just give me the end result.
But I think they're worried about fans critiquing it for them skipping or for not showing their work,
sure,
so to speak. And I think that's why you have to have like those clumsy lines like, what about Riker and Worf and LaForge? I don't want to bother them, you know, like, because they're too loyal and they'll say yes. And it's just like, you know what? I can totally understand Picard not reaching out to them.
Sure.
I would say just something like maybe those three that were name dropped there, they have too much to lose. And that's why Picard can't involve them. Like, I'm down with that. Or maybe the people that he's seeking out, like, say, Agnes, she has the expertise that he needs, that maybe Worf doesn't have all the AI skills that...
Worf, figure out this highly advanced AI. I'll get back to you on that one, Captain.
we'll just see all the AI like beating the crap out of him.
It was interesting though that the mention of Worf and Riker, it raised kind of two things in my mind. Number one was that it's kind of like now they have the Avengers problem, Where are the Avengers? Why can't they deal with this? They're off world right now. And I guess that's why they're going to explain in this moment why, you know, he's not getting Riker and Geordi and all that. The other point that was actually, it's not really that interesting, but I've seen a lot of fan theories that LaForge would have been killed on Mars, and this disproved that. So something out there for fans who were wondering if that theory was going
to
be true.
I don't like that fan theory.
No.
Like, what a way to dispatch with, like, a beloved character, you know, like, killed off screen.
Yeah. LeVar Burton's like, thank God I need that paycheck for Picard season two.
Yeah, exactly. But look, we're getting more into the Borg stuff and the Romulan fascination with what's going on here.
I'm not going to lie. I am a bit confused about some of the details of this episode. So if I get it wrong, viewers, no, I'll have it right next week once I've rewatched this episode, because there was a lot going on.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. But okay, so if we get into the nitty gritty, like the more expository stuff that we are trying to dissect right here, we're trying to break it down. When listeners listen to us, we just watched it Thursday night, so it may have already been decoded by the time this drops in a few days. But
right.
Okay, so you have what I think is a Vulcan Commodore.
Yes.
I believe she's a Vulcan because she's referred to as a good ally for us. This was with Lieutenant Rizzo. Shout out to Greece, I guess.
Greece is the word.
who is the older sister to Narek, who is on the Borg cube, the Romulan reclamation site.
Right.
And I think what's going on is they are trying to eliminate as many synths as they can, because Romulans just inherently don't like synths, and specifically the is it the Jadfast? That's
Jadvage.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. They're the ones the people pulling the strings behind the Tal Shiar.
Yeah,
which is interesting, and I do wish they give us more of the exposition that I'm more interested in. Than like, okay, so obviously the Romulan Star Empire exists to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Their home world is destroyed. Just like I don't think the Federation would collapse if, say, one of the most important planets was destroyed as well, like Earth or Vulcan, for example.
Right.
So I can buy that the Romulan Star Empire still exists. In what state? That's what I'm very interested in.
Right.
You know? And we see Romulans with 1980s punk hairdo giving tours on a Borg cube.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't had any issues in any of the like alien or character design through really Discovery or Discovery. Got a bit of weird Klingon stuff, but other than that, I think it's been really strong. I think this show's been really strong. That Romulan looked a little dorky.
Honestly, I'm totally cosplaying as him. I totally am.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I did get a bit of a chuckle when I saw Patrick Stewart put on his comm badge, and then like he was trying to get a message out. I was like, oh, at first I just thought he was just pretending as the good old days when he could get like a ship and a crew. And I was like, oh yeah, Patrick's doing the cosplay there. So with this Romulan plan, the teaser, it starts out with F8, or Fate, as you might use on a license plate.
Right.
Which is a fun, interesting sequence. It spelled out what had already been alluded to in the short Trek Children of Mars, as well as the previous other exposition dump with FNN, the news station. What did you think of this sequence, Cam?
Really enjoyed it a lot. It had a couple really interesting elements. One that people are going to immediately glom onto is the android taking F8 taking over, which reminded me a lot of the episode Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Where it silently turns and just starts going nuts on a console.
Quick hands.
Yeah, yeah. And how, you know, all the other human characters are unable to stop it. I thought that was a really fantastic, effective way of doing, like, a big tragic event in very small scale, you know, without a lot of CG effects and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, this moment where you're establishing like four or five characters just interacting with an android, it does so much more for me than watching, I don't know, just explosions go kablooey on screen.
Like the CG ships flying around and fireballs coming up. Yeah.
That's what we got in Children of Mars, and we didn't really care much about that, you know? So so here's my theory, and I'm always horrible at theories, though.
Yeah.
But look, do you think that maybe the Tal Shiar were taking advantage of this horrible tragedy with the supernova, and if the one thing they want most is to eliminate synthetic life forms, they could have been the ones behind the androids going bad at this point, which ended up with that galactic truce,
right?
Which I assume the Romulan Star Empire is a part of, and yeah. that's why, you know, what we got the end result that we did.
I mean, that makes the most sense, but I almost wonder if it's too simple for us to just be able to lay it out in episode two. I don't know how twisty this show is going to be. I mean, judging from all the stuff with Rizzo and filed down ears and all that, I feel like they're going to be keeping us guessing a lot through these 10 episodes.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, yeah, no, I agree. One other interesting thing I thought was well done, though, was the sense of uncanny valley with the androids here, where you had the human characters being actively kind of like creeped out by, as she said, creeped out by the android. And you can totally understand that, you know, as they always say, the closer something looks to looking kind of like you, the more you'll notice the differences that make it kind of off-putting. It is an interesting question with Star Trek androids of how far you can advance them before that would be completely erased.
Yeah, and that's why maybe there's kind of that key search going on for these organic synthetics, you know, which is, I still have no idea what's going on with Narek and Soji, and they're sleeping together for some reason, although she knows absolutely nothing about him. So is it just that he's hot? That's why she's hooking up the Britomulan?
Other characters are saying he's hot, so...
Yeah.
I guess
Cam,
so.
You can admit it, too. I don't know about myself.
I didn't jump out to me at all. I mean, you throw Anson Mount on the bridge, I'm like, that's a good-looking guy. Right. This one, I don't know, didn't jump out to me, but apparently it did to you, so
more like
there you go.
Handsome Mount.
That's right.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, I know that, like, when we talked about episode one, you know, you said he really was villainous, and a lot of our friends equally agreed. And, you know, in rewatching the episode, you're like, yeah, it seems pretty obvious.
He literally has the introduction of an electric guitar playing as he walks over the platform.
It's like the Con Air score.
Yeah.
But I guess
he should have the Con Air haircut that Nick Cage had at the beginning.
Oh, that would be amazing. I'm going to show you God does exist. That would be great. But I guess maybe part of me has been programmed by Star Trek to not pick out instant villains. Like, I feel like a lot of the strength of the franchise is... it's about characters, and yes, some of them do villainous things, but they don't walk on screen with a villain score underneath them. You know, there's obviously examples where they do. You know, I don't know that the Borg Queen looks lovable the first time you see her, or Nero at the start of 2009, but by and large, Star Trek is pretty good about villains that you're not just like, there's your villain.
Yeah.
So well, I guess maybe that's why it didn't... I guess I just I didn't feel like it could be summed up in that moment in like... I don't know, 30 seconds of screen time?
Khan is maybe a good example of that, where like he kind of initially appears as, hey, that's an interesting artifact from another time, and then you realize that there are more villainous traits behind that. We also discussed last week how we don't think a villain would necessarily emerge within, until at least like the midway mark.
Yeah.
But it looks as if they do have some very interesting Starfleet commanders still go on strong with their hatred for... Federation ideals, which is a consistent theme through all of Star Trek. I'm not convinced something has fundamentally changed in Starfleet.
Right.
This seems to be something we've been looking at ever since season one of TNG.
Yeah, no kidding. It's the continuation of conspiracy. Yeah. We're finally getting those worm people.
If that's what this all leads up to, yet another horrible, disgusting disintegration scene, I'm all for that. But this reclamation sites, though, it is curious to me because we obviously saw a lot of Federation species on board. People are taking tours of it. It seems as if the Romulans are at peace with the Federation then. I don't know the connection with regards to like, this Borg cube is just floating out there.
Yeah.
Was this, like... something left over from a previous attack or like it's one of those question marks I hope they address. But they said that one drone had been in stasis for 14 years and the first contact scene at the beginning, it took place 14 years ago.
Right.
I was actually a little confused about the timing because I thought they had established it took place a decade ago. Is a 10-year anniversary of the supernova? That's what they were acknowledging last week?
Yes.
But then this time it said the attack was 14 years ago.
Right.
I don't. This is not really the stuff that matters, but I was just trying to make sense of why this Borg thing would be floating out there. But the thing is that you got 14 years ago twice in one episode. That's not a coincidence. Yeah. So. I wonder the ultimate connection between the Borg, the androids, and the Romulans. There's this kind of triumvirate of antagonists to varying levels. I wouldn't call the androids antagonistic unless, of course, you think about the first scene of this episode.
I think the people that were on Mars might disagree with you.
That's very true. That's very true.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what's going on this Borg cube, because, boy, did characters explain a lot, but it's a nice, volatile mix that just makes you that much more confused, in that characters are both telling you a lot of information about what's going on there, but then also veiling everything they're saying, too. Like, it's all secrets. So it's like, I walked away going, I have no idea what's going on this Borg cube, really.
Yeah, for me, I'll be honest, this kind of stuff, it's frustrating storytelling for me. It's not the kind of stuff that I was hoping from Star Trek Picard. You know, it almost seems like the way TV was being written like 6-7 years ago, where I think we've had a lot of the more prestige programs kind of move away from the keep them guessing sort of deal, you know? And for Star Trek, the other thing about like mystery shows is like, it's pretty lame when the audience figures out the mystery well before the characters that we're following do. And that's what always worries me very much with this. And that's why we're delighted that they kind of let us figure out the whole Dodge mystery very early on into episode one. So
Discovery has a bad habit of hiding twists through over-talking. Yeah. It's like throw so much information at people that it just sends them in a billion directions at once. And that's what some of this kind of reminds me of, where I'm like, guys, just keep it simple, please.
Well, and the moments that I like about it, I like, you know, watching Picard talk about how he never really got sci-fi.
Fun.
Those moments with,
that Patrick Stewart or was that Picard saying that?
Take it however you will.
Yeah.
You know, and, or even, you know, as much as I didn't care for that scene where Picard's vineyard helper went into the apartment.
Right.
The moments when they were back at the vineyard together, I like that. You're more in the hangout mode. I do have to say, so she's apparently a former Tal Shiar agent,
I believe so, yes.
So, and she works at a vineyard.
Yes.
So, Cam, you're not really a wine connoisseur, but I now want to refer to her as Tal Shiraz. Like,
okay.
That is a very popular
variety of wine. Yeah.
So, there you go. So, Tal Shiraz it is.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was a nice little reveal. I really like that character.
Yeah.
I like that character more than some of the characters they're asking me to go on this journey of Picard with.
Burn on Michelle Hurd, who got but mere 30 seconds of screen time.
Yeah, exactly.
I do like how Picard did bring a bottle of wine to, like, schmooze with her, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I like that moment where she's like, there's nothing I can ever want to hear from you. He's like, deadly Romulan assassins are here on Earth. And then she's like, okay, let's go ahead and talk.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that we've had this whole idea of, like, sleeper agents on, you know, in Starfleet a few times. Because I joked about conspiracy earlier, but we had it there. We also had a lot of paranoia on DS9 surrounding the changelings being on Earth. Neither of those ever really paid off in a big, grand-scale way. Conspiracy just got dropped completely, and the changeling stuff, you know, you got that two-parter, but they really did pull back on it.
We got Miles O'Brien briefly,
right?
And I guess later on we did get Julian Bashir for an extended period where he's performing brain surgery on Sisko, which is fascinating.
We also got three guards standing outside of Joseph Sisko's restaurant.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but I guess this almost feels like the third take on this where they're actually going to commit.
So I was actually thinking about this. I was going to throw this question to you. I think they might be going in a bit of a different direction, like along what you're talking about, though. Do you think that there is an android character that we don't know is an android? It's an organic synthetic that we just don't realize. That's the fact. Like, I am curious about that because I wonder who would hate, you know, the androids the most. They're saying the Romulans, right?
Yeah.
What if one of these Romulan characters finds out he or she is an android? I think that's a very interesting, dramatic thing for somebody to have to grapple with. You know, like, I'm fascinated by that potential.
Well, it does feel, now that you bring it up, like it would be a little convenient to have this character. You know, we had Dodge in the first one and Dr. Asha in this episode. I don't think Dr. Asha knows she's an android.
I don't believe so.
Yeah. So it would be a little curious to introduce these two characters who are completely, you know, they could walk as humans in any walk of life. Like, no one would ever recognize them. They didn't realize they were androids initially. And to have those characters and have no other characters in the entire season that are secretly androids, it seems unlikely.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I could predict that maybe one of these Romulan characters dies in one episode.
Sure.
And then, I don't know, we see them two episodes later because they have a twinsie, an AI twinsie.
Right, yeah.
You know, and of course, they're wearing the same necklace.
Well, what if Picard succumbs to this illness and the onward seasons are Robo-Picard?
Robo-Picard, okay. I can't wait. It was all in Data's imagination this entire time. So, look, this is not the best way to really kick off your series journey.
No.
But I'm not saying that there's, like, it's a disaster from here on out. I'm just, I'm thinking that what they had to do is just get rid of, like, all the grading stuff, and then from there we can find the adventure. But I want those small moments. Like, those are the ones that keep working best for me.
Same. I agree 100%. And I do find it frustrating that, you know, this is, we're only two episodes in, so it's, you know, too early to be overly dramatic about the creative direction of the show. But I am a little bugged at how much time in this episode was characters giving either exposition that was factual and exposition that was fictional versus introducing some of these characters and letting me get to know them.
Yeah. And I guess a dramatic high point is where Picard goes to Admiral Clancy and says, hey, look, reinstate me for one last mission. Give me an easygoing warp ship, you know, a bit of a crew. She drops F-bombs on him, you know, like, and just talking about his hubris. Which she has a point in that he made such a show of his real feelings about Starfleet. Now he's groveling and asking for some help here. But that's Picard jumping out of his seat and saying, you lost sight of Federation ideals. That, to me, was a dramatic highlight. I want more of those kinds of scenes where it's characters having conflict as opposed to sharing information, which is a little tedious.
And what I loved about that scene, too, was that you have these two individuals who are obviously very smart, very capable Starfleet people having a disagreement over, you know, in this case, it's this, you know, what Picard had done with helping the Romulans versus not helping the Romulans and the importance of Starfleet and the Federation and preserving their safety. So you have these two figures that both have strong opinions. You can't say either one's 100% wrong. And so we're getting to watch these two volley back and forth. And I want more stuff like that because that's really what, you know, I get it. Like, the tone of original TNG stories probably doesn't fly with people now if you were just recreate that. But you know what? The tone's changed.
Captain's Holiday.
Right. But the tone's changed in some of the movies, but they kept that general idea of they were driven by the ideas of Picard and, you know, the characters. And I think we need a little more of that, a little less exposition.
Yeah, in this showdown between Picard and the Admiral,
yeah.
I guess you and I were speculating as to why not get Janeway in as that role. But if you
now
have like the Admiral being a jerk,
yeah,
as you say, now we know.
Yeah.
But why not Nechayev, though? Like, I still think, you know, we've got a very small list of Admirals we can go back to. Unfortunately, Barry Pennard passed away. He played Admiral Ross. It's really just Nechayev is the only one that they really have chambered, and Janeway. And instead we go to generic Admiral who doesn't like being reminded of their Starfleet duties.
Yeah, and if you want one who maybe like Nechayev is a little too prominent, they don't want to kind of use in maybe what is kind of maybe not the most sympathetic of Admiral roles. Maybe they want to save her for something else. But there's lots of like smaller Admirals on TNG who popped up once or twice you could have thrown in there.
5'4".
But there's, you know, there's a few you could have thrown in. I mean, maybe that's fan service-y, but, you know.
Admiral Pressman, fresh on parole.
That would be amazing.
He's back 100% behind the desk.
Yeah. Because then you would be like, I am on Picard's side. I want to watch him yell at this Admiral.
That'd be fun to see. Beyond that, the only other Admiral I can think of is Admiral Todman from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Only because that is the dorkiest name for an Admiral, Todman.
But it does, once again, raise the issue of, you know, we did that whole episode on, you know, why do admirals suck? And it is a tough role to cast any actor as an admiral, especially one who's on the, you know, in many ways the offensive in this episode, up against the character the show is named after now.
I know.
Who the whole world who's watching this show absolutely adores.
Like, and I say that this is the dramatic highlight for me, but it is kind of a fundamental problem with the scene because you know that everyone's going to be on the side of Picard during this, even though, I mean, I understand Admiral Clancy's point, you know, but of course, we agree with Picard.
Yeah.
So
because she's like, stay on Earth and don't do anything. And we're like, well, you know what? We don't want to watch that show. Thanks.
The other thing that kind of irked me, though, is just the introduction of Commodore O, I believe is her name. Mm-hmm. The Vulcan Commodore, or at least we believe she's Vulcan.
She had the Idic on her desk, so.
Oh, I did not notice that. Okay.
I did because then I was looking at it and going, first off, I was like, oh, I wonder if all admirals who are Vulcan have that out. And then I thought, oh, maybe they want us to spot that that is a Vulcan, like, because they think that we may be confused. Well, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, okay. Because I was just, she seemed far less composed than the average Vulcan that we've encountered.
Yeah,
she seemed pissed off.
Yeah, which maybe is a little more closer to maybe more almost like the original series Vulcans in some ways.
Yeah. Well, in... Here's the deal. Like, last week, you and I didn't have any problems figuring out that, like, those are obviously Romulan refugees living with Picard. But this one, I had to do a double take. I was like, so did they have, like, an Admiral Exchange program or a Commodore Exchange program? Or was this, like, a woman who became, like, a Starfleet officer 14 years ago and rose through the ranks very swiftly? Like, because the Romulans and the Vulcans look so similar, because we used to have the distinct ridges with Romulans. I have no issue with, like, kind of a little bit of a new look for iconic species, but I just wonder how we can further delineate who looks like what, especially since, like, this particular Vulcan Commodore did not have, like, the patented bowl cut that we're so used to seeing.
Yeah, I wonder if it was a wise idea to, you know, I mean, in this first couple episodes, it's Romulan this, Romulan that, Romulans everywhere, right? As far as the eye can see, and then cutting to a Vulcan.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if we could have just made that an Andorian or something, and it would have avoided visual confusion.
But you know what? I think the thing is, they're tapping into something I've always been very curious about, but the Romulan influence on Vulcan and the Vulcan influence on Romulus.
Right.
That's always something that's been hinted at. I think the most we got to see was the unification two-parter, as well as what we saw going on with Enterprise Season 4 with the Kishara three-parter there. And you're getting a lot of hints that these two species, while related, they have been trying to influence the other covertly on their respective planets. So I like this idea that they're continuing on this thread. I just hope that for a simple person like me, I don't know, maybe they can put, walk around with the infinite diversity and infinite combinations earrings or something like that.
A big, like, medallion necklace around the neck.
Exactly.
Kind of like the old hip-hop clocks.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah. So,
I do wonder, though, you and I are going to rewatch this episode. You and I are sitting there watching the episode, taking notes, paying close attention to the mythology they're spitting out and trying to unravel it. I wonder, though, what a casual viewer who watches an episode like this gets out of it.
A casual viewer that hasn't really tuned into Star Trek since TNG went off the air.
Doesn't maybe really even know the difference between a Romulan and a Vulcan.
Yeah. You know, like, that's kind of why I got a little worried when we had that scene in the apartment. I was just like, this is not the way that you grab new viewers. Like, and the thing is, you go back and watch TNG... There is a lot of technobabble.
Oh, yeah. The old pillar filler, as they called it.
Yeah. But the deal is, you watch Deep Space Nine, there's, like, almost no technobabble. Mm-hmm. And so it obviously works for Star Trek if you have, like, virtually no technobabble. So that's why I kind of assumed it'd be the same with Picard.
Especially since Patrick Stewart really didn't like the technobabble.
Yeah.
And he has a pretty strong creative role on this Picard series. So I would have thought he would have been maybe, please do not do that.
I think he wrote it all. He's like, I've been studying computer science.
It's my new hobby.
I'm a coder.
William Shatner told me about pixels, and I went down a rabbit hole.
Shout out to pixels for Shatner. For all those that don't recall, we've done many a Shatner pixel reference after he spent a long time at a convention talking about his interest in pixels. He was reading a book, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. It was a book pixels. On pixels, yeah. And I understood his pixel talk about as much as the exposition here.
yes, I'm with you there. Okay, if we get into more of the minutiae, though, we finally get, like, a good look at the new Starfleet uniforms, for example.
Yep.
I saw that some publicity shots or whatever. I didn't really like the look of them. I'm actually sold on them now.
I think they look nice.
I think they look pretty good. They recognize kind of the history of TNG.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah, but they also kind of acknowledge like there's kind of that move forward with regards to kind of the fashion choices as well. It's just the comm badge that we originally saw in All Good Things. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you this right now, Cam. I am totally buying the QMX future comm badge, the $23.99 comm badge, like at next, it's got to be available by the summer, right?
I would have to imagine they'll have them out for the convention season. Yeah.
You know me. Yeah. Remember I had the Tilly Cadet badge and I lost the back plate and so it could not magnetize anymore. Mm-hmm. You saw how bummed out I was. You ended up getting me a replacement for my birthday, which I do appreciate. But I love those badges. I've got like three or four of them already of like Discovery, Voyager, Klingon, so I am sold on the Star Trek Picard QMX comm badges. Magnetized.
I just wear a black one on the streets, the black badge, and every single person goes, are you in Section 31?
Exactly.
Because everyone knows what Section 31 is now.
Well, that's another thing. Speaking of Commodore O and Lieutenant Rizzo, they're wearing the gold uniforms. They're, I guess, operatives within Starfleet Security. Mm-hmm. I was relieved that we didn't get a Section 31 name drop, but they were talking as if they were Section 31 folks, not Starfleet Security folks, right?
It would also really shock me if we had this whole reveal of the Jot Vaj, or whatever they are, the Romulan group, you know, beneath the Tal Shiar, and we didn't get some sort of mention of Section 31 somewhere in this season. It just seems unlikely if you're going to delve into secret intelligence organizations to not include Section 31 at some point, even if it's just like one character representing it or a name mentioned that's fairly thorough.
Do you think they've recruited Garak into Jot Vaj at this point after the implosion of the Obsidian Order and everything?
You joke, but I mean, how like amazing would that go over if suddenly Garak joined?
What do you think the pitch is to Patrick Stewart? Look, executive producer.
Yeah.
We've got a fan favorite here.
Yeah. Garak.
He's plain and simple.
I don't like science fiction.
So I think you're right. Like, if we're dealing with the Tal Shiar threads, I think you got to bring up the Section 31 using... Yeah. We literally saw an episode on Deep Space Nine, Inter Arma Enum Silent Legus.
I'm amazed that you can always remember the name of that episode. Okay. I'm very impressed.
Well, thank you very much.
I mean, the CV Pacem Parabellum I'll always be able to do, but that one is, I think, the next step up.
I have so few skills, so...
Sure.
Yeah. And this one does not make me money. But in that episode, though, we literally see, you know, Section 31, like, assassinating, like, Romulans. Or orchestrating the assassination of Romulans on Romulus itself. You know, there's interference in the foreign affairs of other species. And it is interesting to see that Federation isn't as clean as they like to portray themselves.
Oh, totally. I mean, well, we see they're not that clean in this episode even, and that's not even Section 31.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems unlikely, too, that you would have scenarios like we saw here where the Romulan agents have basically cleaned the murder room, where Daj's boyfriend was killed, and they've used all this high-tech technology. They've had a public attack on Daj that caused a massive explosion, and Section 31 wouldn't be investigating this.
Yeah.
Seems unlikely.
Well, and you already know the fact that the security branch of Starfleet, they have the Commodore saying, like, does that not look like the reflection of a disruptor?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like they're at least aware of what's going on. So I have to believe other elements in Starfleet are, too.
Yeah. What did you think of the introduction of this character, Lieutenant Rizzo?
It was weird.
It was weird. We talked, just earlier about, obvious villains. This one seemed like a real obvious villain right away.
Well, same with Commodore O.
Yeah.
Which is like, even the way that they just kind of shot the scene, and it was very much meant to beat into your head that these are bad guys.
It was almost like they lowered the lights so they would be saying everything in shadows.
There are four lights, Cam.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I thought Rizzo... I mean, I was not shocked when they referenced that she, you know, filed her ears down or surgically filed her ears down.
I don't think they filed her ears down.
I'm just saying they
give her round ears, you know. So.
But
I think that's the new racial slur amongst Romulans. It's like, hey, they're round ear.
I mean, wouldn't surprise me.
Less offensive than the Andorian, hey there, pink skin.
Right, yeah.
Did you notice the Andorians in the background?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they definitely look more of, I guess, the Enterprise era than the Discovery era.
Definitely.
Look.
Yeah.
Are they? Is it a different makeup crew? Is it the Hetrick
team know.
And all that?
I would have to look at the credits on that
because
one.
Because the Tellarite that we saw last week, it looked very much like kind of the Glenn Hetrick like version that we got from Discovery. I would have to assume that they're still going to be doing all of this, even though there's like one crew in LA and another crew in Toronto.
I would think so. I mean, we never saw Tellarites on TNG, so maybe they just feel like they can stick with the new visual look for a Tellarite, but maybe like the Andorians are a little too established in their eyes.
We saw that
green one, Tyler.
Yeah, we only saw one green Andorian on the holodeck in all of TNG.
And people have never forgotten that look.
Yeah. Well, mind you, you're making that argument. I don't know. These Andorians look blue to me. So.
Well, that's true. That's because you didn't have the colors right on your TV.
Fair enough, yeah.
Picard's are not actually blue.
I like having the motion blur sort of programming on mine. Yeah, so, okay. So I'm still trying to wrap my head around this reclamation site. And, like, we had, like, a Trill taking a tour. We had Andorians there. I'm just wondering what the dealio is with all of this.
Because it has heavy Romulan security overseeing everything. So it's like, why are these other people, these other alien species there? That's what I can't quite figure out. I was waiting. Like, I was really waiting because characters were throwing exposition around left, right, and center. I was waiting for that one moment where it would all click into my head as to what was going on.
Yeah.
And it never did. And I was like, oh, that's frustrating.
So it said, 5,800 days since the last assimilation?
Yeah.
So if I'm doing the rough math, only because I can count 365 times 10 is, 3,600. So we're looking at about, 15 years ago.
Right.
Which is about the time
really
that...
14 years ago.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's about the time that lines up with the first contact day massacre /, I guess, the Romulan supernova?
I guess so.
Yeah. So it seems as if it's all sort of connected. As far as the experiments, I guess they're seeing what it's like for people to be reintegrated into society after being disconnected from this collective hive mind, which is something that I'm always interested when they explored it, especially on Voyager, So
that episode Unity.
That fan favorite right there, Cam.
But you did see in this one, like, a worker who had obviously the implants removed from his head.
And now you're free. That's what Soji said to him. And so I mean,
that was different one, but yeah, for sure. The one who was, there was actually one just working.
Oh,
They cut to a close-up of his face.
Yeah.
There's the one on the slab as well, yeah.
And the punk rock and Romulan tour guide also said, like, hey, just FYI, you will see, like, former drones. Mm-hmm. But he didn't call them, did the Trill call them XPs or XDs? I would think, like, D as in drone, but I thought she said XPs. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't actually.
Like, she said something lines like, hey, are you here studying the XPs?
XDs makes a lot more sense.
It makes a lot more sense.
I'm trying to even, like, I'm racking my brain at the moment, trying to even come up with a P word that would relate to anything Borg. And nothing's coming to mind, so I don't know.
Okay.
XDs makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows the term drone when you talk about Borg.
Maybe P for Picard.
Maybe.
X Picards.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was Locetus after all. So. Yeah.
But I would imagine, though, that what Dr. Asha is there doing is different than what Nurok is there to do. I feel like what these two are working to achieve here, or not working together, but like both what each are working to do, is conflicting with what the other one wants.
Well, okay.
I would have to imagine.
She's... Okay, so we had Daj as like the AI specialist, right? She was she's bound for Daystrom.
Mm-hmm.
But we have Soji is studying the Borg Collective, which is not necessarily AI though. It is,
advanced cybernetics.
Cybernetics. Yeah. So it is that combination of organic and robotic, which is essentially kind of this organic synthetic that Soji is at this point. So I'm just curious about like, and what's also the ultimate end goal with having, like, dispatching these two twins into different roles in the galaxy? Like, what are they, whoever did this, which I'm assuming is Maddox,
yeah,
what was he trying to accomplish with that?
I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah. Bruce Maddox getting enough shout-outs, like, if he doesn't
appear... Are
they
losing people with this? We know it. We know who Maddox is.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if they're losing people with that.
I think they are, because, like, I just... Yeah. The problem is when you keep saying the name of a character and you never actually see the character...
Or even a photo of him.
Yeah, it just kind of loses a lot of meaning. Like, what was going on? There was one season of, I think, Discovery, where I was kind of complaining about that same issue, where they kept saying, like...
What was it, the Spock
it was
thing?
It was a Spock thing. Yeah. They kept saying, oh, we just missed Spock. And it got frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, it's just... It's not great storytelling.
And I mean, for us, we're looking forward to seeing Maddox, or whatever the end goal is for having that character's big reveal. Like, we are looking forward to that. But I do wonder, let's just assume at the moment, because that's all we can do, that they end up bringing the actor who played Maddox in Measure of Men back, say, you know, a few episodes from now, and that's the big meetup of, oh my god, here's Maddox. I just wonder, to, like, newer viewers to this show, like, very, very casual TNG viewers who have hopped over to Picard, whether that means anything. And it's just like all this build-up meant nothing to them.
I want the music to swell as he enters
the scene. To be like the Phantom of the Opera, like, playing the... The organ.
That'd be amazing.
And he turns around.
No, he's like Martin Prince in the future episode on The Simpsons, right, it's like electronic opera, Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah. Like, he's got like a keytar.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
I just wonder if it's smart, you know, you reference Spock. You tease Spock, even an, you know, newcomer to the franchise has an idea of who Spock is.
Yeah.
Maddox, you're building up to nothing for those people.
He was in one episode.
Yeah.
Yep. It was a great episode, Measure of a Man.
For sure. One of the probably the best of the early episodes by far.
Oh, yeah. So, well, speaking of, you know, other shout-outs, though, Stargazer got that.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. We saw one Maurice, a former crew member, as played by David Paymer, which you and I both jumped out of our seats and cheered. It was just interesting
to see. They got my letters.
but, like, a recognizable character actor coming in for a role like this, which... I don't think he's going to be popping up as a recurring necessarily, but...
Well, season two.
Okay. But I was originally wondering, I was like, was this the guy that was trying to get Picard on board with the Atlantis project back in the episode Family in TNG? It's not.
Right. But... Yeah, I was initially racking my brain as to whether this was some character who'd popped up in TNG or something. But yeah. I mean, this character was mostly here to give, you know, the exposition of what's going on with Picard and a possible neurological issue he may be facing. But, you know, you watch this scene. This is two old pros bringing so much subtext to this scene just through their performance that does not exist in a lot of the other scenes with these other characters talking.
Well, if we talk about Picard's, you know, parietal lobe, I mean, to me it seems like an obvious thing that they could point to is his heart.
Mm-hmm.
Or he doesn't have one, Cam.
Right, yeah.
Or else, why not connect the parietal lobe issue to his assimilation?
That's what I was thinking it was.
You know, but maybe they just didn't, maybe they'll go there later. Maybe it just didn't occur to them. And I wonder if it did occur to them and they just didn't, there's a reason why they're not connecting the two.
I'm wondering now, you just got my mind a-worrying. And we had this whole sequence in this one where you see Dr. Asha removing, and her team, removing implants from Borgs. And now I'm wondering if they're going to have some sort of advanced science that they're going to use to cure Picard of whatever this ailment is that was maybe caused by the Locutus stuff.
Yeah.
Boom.
So they now need each other.
Season two.
And my only worry is I hope... look, we always do a lot of like speculation on Discovery, and we always say we hope we're wrong because we like to be surprised.
Yeah.
So, what did you make of those, I don't know, coronavirus face masks that they were wearing in that room? Like, they looked like
very
the most
timely,
useless things ever. It's like you could see their mouths through them.
Yeah.
It's like, was it supposed to be like sexy lingerie like face masks or something? I was just like, okay.
That's what they were marketed as.
Well, that's what I'm going as my cosplay, you know, in Vegas this year. Yeah. Just walk around like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess it was that, you know, in the old days when you'd have sci-fi and everyone would wear silver. I think this was the futuristic version of that, you know, the 2020 version of futuristic wear.
Okay.
It's where it's like black.
See-through.
Yeah, black and see-through.
Black and see-through, okay.
Yeah, we can't do the silver anymore.
Okay, can't wait for Patrick Stewart's space outfits. If it's just black and see-through.
His Captain's Holiday Speedo comes back, but futuristic. Yeah.
Maybe we can speculate on what this crew is that he's building up here.
Yeah.
We've got, I think, who's supposed to be kind of the brains, which is going to be Agnes. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this, I'm staying away from, you know, episode teasers and all that. Yeah. But
we're just going off the evidence on screen.
Allison Pill is in the main cast.
Yeah.
You know, so I think she's got to be part of this crew.
And the biggest star of the new cast.
I would say so. Yeah. Yeah. And then Michelle Hurd, she's got to be like the muscle of the operation. That's what I gather.
Pilot? I don't know, because I think he's going to her about his ship, right? I thought maybe she was going to be like the rebellious pilot type or something.
I don't know about that. I'm just looking at the way that she was introduced.
Right.
Sleeveless t-shirt.
Sure.
Holding a gun.
The hat, too. Kind of the military style hat.
So yeah, I'm guessing she's the muscle. He's going to acquire a ship somehow. It's going to be a bit of a ragtag crew. I'm guessing there's going to be a Romulan presence on board, too.
Well, Rizzo said, aside from Grease is the word, Rizzo also said that she was going to put her best man on it. And I'm wondering if that's that character we've seen in artwork who has like the sword on his back.
I think she's referring to Narek.
Was she referring to Narek? I wasn't sure.
That would be kind of mean if like your sister is like, I'm going to put my best man on it. And it's not her little brother.
But she was saying that to the Admiral. I wasn't sure if the Admiral knew of her connection to Narek.
Narek.
Narek, yeah. That's what I was wondering if maybe.
I'm just saying from, like, if you're. The way that they cut the scene where they're immediately saying, like, I'm going to put my best man on it, and then they cut to Narek.
Yeah.
To me, that's just kind of like narrative shorthand that they typically use in that.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was just the reveal that she was connected to him. That's why,
I think it's just more likely that that's who she's talking about as opposed to some other unnamed character. Because the thing is the Commodore is saying, like, you know, I have grave reservations about this person.
Yeah.
And then they immediately follow up with Narek.
Sure.
Like, that just makes sense to me that that's who that they're trying to build up more and more.
I would have more confidence in that editing if the end wasn't so abrupt.
Yeah, that was a kind of a weird end. I think you and I, we were surprised that, you know, like, they didn't go back to Patrick drinking wine with his old war buddy, or I think it's Raffi is Michelle Raffi's character.
Yeah.
So
that name I can remember.
I can't wait till she starts singing Baby Beluga. That's gonna be fun.
Yeah,
and I know that Raffi and the former hockey player Raffi Torres.
Yep.
So I'm sure we can make lots of dad jokes moving forward throughout the rest of Picard's run.
I can't wait. And speaking of dad jokes. There was also the moment where Picard goes up, and it's not really a dad joke, but he goes up and talks to the security personnel, and they're like, name? Or, you know, like, they don't know his name. And I was like, huh, this seems to be a new trend of iconic characters having to introduce themselves to desk clerks, because we see that in the new Bond trailer as well.
Yeah.
So, Picard, getting that trend going.
I'm afraid to say it, but I think next one, you're gonna have, name? Stark? Comma Tony.
Sure. I think it's a little late for that one, though.
They'll do a flashback scene in Black Widow.
Sure. I think we could see it with Captain America, though.
If we get to have, like, super old Picard back, then yes, super old Steve Rogers back in action, too.
Yeah. Another moment that I actually rolled my eyes at was where Narek says, can you keep...
Narek.
It'll believe me, folks. I'll have this for next
week. The problem is though, I kept calling him Narek last episode.
Now you've
really
and
now
thrown
you're,
me off.
I've totally screwed you over.
Yeah. So there's the moment where Narek is saying, can you keep a secret? And Asha goes, yes. And he goes, so can I. I'm like, that is the most cliched screenwriting possible.
I know.
Like, that is, holy smokes, is that an old one?
All right. So I'm thinking, right, if I look back at last week, I'd probably give that episode like a B.
Sure.
This one, if I'm being honest, I give it a C. It's like, I don't think this is going to be one that fans are rewatching, you know, with their friends and family over the holidays or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I think they need to maybe delineate the episodes a little bit more, make them a little bit more standalone in that you can still retain the serialized storytelling, but you're very much like, oh, this is the caper episode where Picard and Tal Shiraz have to figure out exactly what happened. I think they can do a more distinct way of really differentiating episode to episode.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm totally with you in that. I mean, ultimately, what was this episode? Like, yeah. What was this the story of?
Yeah, and what's kind of the theme or the message that we're walking away with that we'll always kind of remember, you know?
Yeah, what I got out of this one was they decided to take it a little easier, a little more relaxed in the pilot, and then they just decided to take all that world building they needed to do and push it all into episode two. And it was just like, I often found it kind of overwhelming. And it, because there was so much of it, it didn't feel like it was being doled out gracefully.
Yeah.
It felt like it was packed into 43 minutes. In which case you're like, you know, guys, you could have made it a little bit longer and just spaced it out that extra little bit more.
But I'm a fan of shows keeping things tight.
Yeah.
You know, but thing is, like, I keep saying how the thing about Star Trek is you like the hangout factor. You like to be able to breathe with the characters. And if there's moments where it's characters talking, not necessarily exposition dumping, but just talking to each other, like, that's why I go back to Agnes and Jean-Luc having tea with each other and talking about, like, Isaac Asimov, you know? Like, those are the sorts of things that I like.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% there. Nice little reference to Asimov, of course. A guest at the very first Star Trek convention.
Yeah,
boom. Very good friend of Roddenberry's. But, yeah, I mean, like, I found this episode just kind of frustrating in that it doesn't give me a lot of character stuff. And, I mean, I guess modern TV viewers have been raised to just, over the last handful of years, to just follow these exposition storylines, and especially even in movies as well. But it's not particularly gratifying.
Yeah.
And it's like, when all is said and done for this season, years down the road, why do I want to revisit this episode?
Exposition, man. Yeah.
The greatest gift of all.
No, do you know why you want to revisit it?
Mm.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One little last point for me. Did you notice that Rizzo's pips, they kept getting messed up in the continuity, though?
No.
You could tell that they're actually magnetized because, like, she's a lieutenant, and then, like, one of the pips kept getting attached in some shots to the other pip. Right. And then other shots, they were clearly separated, and it was very frustrating to me as a viewer. I just, like, as a OCD person, I'm just like, oh, get that pip correct.
What did you think of the new pip placement?
I like it.
Yeah.
It works for me. It reminds me very much of Enterprise, the NX-01 crew, and what they did there. So, yeah, I like how they're, you know, like, pointing to, like, the long, long history of Star Trek, you know, and that's cool to me.
It totally worked for me, the uniforms and everything, the visual look of it. Although I guess, you know, we had such a drastic wardrobe change in the uniforms when you look at those original TNG ones to, like, the Dominion War type uniforms and, you know, the ones obviously in the film, the later films. And I wonder if we'll ever go that drastic again, because it does feel like if you're going to stick with this sort of era, boy, do they want those iconic TNG, classic TNG type uniforms.
I think they're going to go with the Lady Gaga meat suit next.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
What series is that?
Well, it's going to be Star Trek Discovery Season 3, obviously,
because it's
that far ahead in the future.
Well,
Lady Gaga way ahead of everything.
Of course. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll, of course, have a video up tackling this new episode of Picard. So
check out the video stream, guys. We've got, like, I think we put 3 up in the last week just because there's a lot to dissect in the first episode. But keep tuning in. You'll get our day and date coverage, our thoughts on every episode on Thursday nights. And then we'll have the podcast over to you guys to listen to. But I think you had it up like Sunday evening, right, Cam?
Yep. I aim to do the same thing this week. So, and you will know if you are listening to it on Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I think you and I, we have planned Sunday evenings. So have a fun late night, Cameron.
I think I can do that.
Okay.
I think it's doable.
Okay.
So, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vaj, Jot Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R as in Romulan Lounge Lizard, EPORTON.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.